Welcome to LeapCast. I'm your host, Dr. George James. LEAP stands for Leaders, Entertainers, Athletes, and Performers. And I'm on a journey to connect with high achievers and highlight their unexamined human moments. Tune in to learn how these high-achieving LEAP individuals were able to reach their greatest potential, face their most difficult challenges, and embrace the human moments that helped them along the way. If you want to get the episode highlights directly in your email, then head to theleapcast.com right now to subscribe. All right, everybody, welcome to LeapCast. I'm your host, Dr. George James. I am excited once again, you know, to bring another friend, amazing person, Leon Ford. He has done, you know, so much with his life. He's gone through a lot, but even more so, he's done a lot, even beyond what he's gone through. He's a speaker, he's an activist, he's just an awesome person, author, and foundation runner, which we'll talk more about that. Leon, yeah, thanks for joining me for LeapCast.
We've been talking about this before you even started the podcast.
Yeah, man, I think you might have been like my first official podcast guest before I had a podcast.
I'm excited to see that, you know, it's up and moving and you're inspiring people, educating people, and just giving out really good information, bro. So
thanks, man. That's my goal. And I'm really honored to have you here. And one of the ways that we like to start is called talking about your LEAP story. So really talking about, like, you know, your early days, talking about it, maybe childhood, maybe family, and especially into your story. I think, like, you know, for the audience, it would be really great for them to hear your story. And then we'll talk about the journey you've been on since. So
my LEAP story.
So tell us your story, man. What's your LEAP story?
From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I come from a very, very loving family. I think coming from a solid family structure is directly connected to my resilience, my confidence, my tenacity, my ambition. You know, just having a loving mother who has always been supportive. I've never been told what I couldn't do, right? Having a loving and protecting father who, you know, he's an alpha male, right? I always felt safe around my father, always felt loved, always felt supported, always felt respected. Neither one of my parents ever like screamed down on me. You know, they always made me feel like I mattered, like, you know, like they respected me, you know. And I feel like, you know, sometimes parents don't acknowledge the child's space. And my parents did, you know, and they created an environment for me to thrive. And I say that, you know, because a lot of people see me and they're like, how are you still happy? You know, how are you still, right? And so yeah. We experienced.
And I've met your parents. I mean, you know, individually, I've met them. And, you know, they are, you know, what you say they are. You know, your mom brings it and your dad brings it in different ways. They're good people.
Oh,
so
man,
shout
you.
Out to, and, to your parents, man.
So fast forward, you know, we experienced some adversity as a family. The loss of my baby sister when I was 13 years old, she was 10 years old. And I feel like that brought us, you know, even closer. You know, I talk to both of my parents every single day. You know, every time, like, we hang up the phone, it's, I love you. Like, there's never a time where we don't say, I love you before we hang up the phone. You know, so, you know, losing my sister was tough. It definitely made us closer. And then, you know, fast forward to when I was 19 years old, I was shot 5 times by a Pittsburgh police officer and lost my ability to walk. You know, that was, it was tough. For me, losing my sister was tougher. You know, it was a bigger loss than being.
What makes you say that? Like, why do you feel like losing your sister? I mean, obviously, like, she was important to you. She's a human being.
Yeah. Like, what, so what, I was raised by alpha men, right? And Now, and it's not even, you know, particular to alpha men. When you love someone, right, you would rather hurt before they hurt. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, losing my 100%. Little sister was, it was devastating. Me being shot, you know, it was like, okay, I got shot, but as long as my family's safe, I'm good. You know what I mean? And losing my little sister was just like, I wish I was able to do more. I wish, you know, I was there to protect her and I wasn't. So that was really tough.
And, you know, I can only imagine, you know, what you had to go through. But just from what you just shared, you're saying from 13 to 19 in a 6-year span, you lost your sister and then you were shot in this traumatic way, which then resulted in the loss of your ability to walk. And of course, there's other things that happened in your life, but like,
you know, that's a tough 6-year span. I never even framed it that way. I didn't even realize that was only 6 years. Wow. Yeah. That's, yeah. So yeah, been through a lot, you know what I mean? And yeah, I woke up in the hospital and, you know, dealing with the fact that I was shot and I was also charged. And so I dealt with a lot of.
Wait. But I mean, I've heard this, but I'm always baffled by this. You were shot.
Charged.
And charged?
Yes, my arraignment was in my hospital bed while I had like tubes in my mouth, you know, and it was a very, you know, frustrating and confusing time for me. Yeah, and, you know, I knew that I didn't want to go to prison. And so on one hand, I was trying to recover, right? I mean, it took me several months to even get out of the ICU, right? And I would believe I was in the hospital for about 6 months. So I'm trying to recover, but now I have this case. And I never made it a race day, right? However, I'm laying in the hospital bed and I went online to see, you know, the articles about me. And the media framed it, black teen shot by a white officer. And so, you know, I read the article and I began reading the comments. And if you know anything, you shouldn't read. Don't read the comments, right?
Them comments. Don't read the comments. If anything, never read the comments. They're horrible.
Yeah, attacking me, my family. You know, some of the most racist comments that, you know, you could think of. And so that is what really fueled my hatred toward white people. I hated all white people at that time. Mm. No exceptions. Mm. Yeah.
White,
you know, and, you know, thinking about me getting shot, this, how the media framed the headline, black teen shot by white officer, and these comments.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it just, you know, it added fuel to the fire. Yeah, I began, you know, watching these videos on YouTube of, like, you know, super black nationalist groups. I would watch a lot of Khalid Muhammad, and he was in the Nation, and he is probably, from my perspective, one of the most charismatic speakers that I've heard, right? And he was able to frame the black experience with, you know, a lot of anger that met me right where I was, you know? Mm-hmm. And
Was it still while you were in the hospital?
Yeah, I'm in the hospital and I'm watching all these videos. And it seemed like every video I was watching, it made me more angry. I was a ball of fire, bro. You know what I mean? Especially when they're using historical references that facts, bro.
They're using facts.
And so these are angry people using facts to express themselves. And I was angry. And I'm learning more about these facts. And yeah. It's making me hate white people even more.
I mean, there's something about like what we do when we're in pain and what we fill ourselves with. I mean, what you're saying right now to me is just so powerful. Like when we're in trauma, when we're in pain, when we're in recovery, you know, we could fill ourselves with hatred, with like negativity, with awful thinking, with bad people. I mean, even down to like bad food and bad habits, right? Like all that stuff, we just consume it because it's just so much pain and hurt there. And you were, because in all of this, I'm like, I'm wondering, is anybody like getting your story or is asking you how you're doing or just checking
I
in
was,
on you?
Like, but were you getting any of that? Receptive. Because my mom and my grandma, they come and they loving on me. They bringing me food, right? There's certain friends that I wanted to be there. And they ain't showing up. So that's making me feel left out. And I'm going on Instagram and everything.
Your day ones, then, like some of those folks that you thought would always be there.
Time, and I realized, like, dang, their lives moved on and my life stopped. So it made me even more frustrated.
Yeah.
You know? And so.
Of course. Just stuffing more anger, more hatred.
Listen, I was just full. And so it was hard for the love of my family to even penetrate my heart because I wanted to be angry. I didn't want to live. I was mad at God. Like, why did she even let me live if I couldn't walk? I remember being angry at my mom because she told me she prayed and she said, I don't care what my son looked like. I don't care how I got to have him. I just want him here. And I'm like, man, you could have prayed. I'm like, you could have prayed for my legs. you could have said, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I don't care what my son is like. As long as he's here, I'm good. You know, as long as he survives, you know. So
man, I'm laughing because that is such a mama prayer. Like, look, just make my baby, stay alive. You know? That's all I care
about. I survived. So I was angry for even surviving. You know what I mean? What is like? Like, how am I going to live my life? You know, how can I add value to the world? How can I make my parents proud? You know, I thought these things were impossible. And so, I wanted to be in that dark spot. I wanted to watch those videos. I wanted to retaliate. And honestly, a few things happened that helped me shift my perspective. The first thing was my son. He was born while I was in the hospital. Mm. I was on the fourth floor. So I got to go down. They rolled me down, to hold him and stuff.
Were you able to be there while he was being born?
She had to get an emergency C-section. And so they had to take her into another room. So I couldn't actually be in the same room. But I was in the next room, and they immediately brought him out. And I began to think, I want to live for him. Like, I want to be a part of his life. And what is that going to look like for me? What does living look like? Do I want to live?
Yeah, especially with all that hate.
Do I want to live with that?
Negativity.
How would my quality of life be if I lived with that, right? Other thing is my nurses, they were phenomenal. Mm. Most of them were white. Wow. So I was like, well, I hate all white people but y'all.
Oh, man.
Right.
Every other white people, right? But not y'all. I mean, I could only imagine, right? You're filled with hate. And on some level, rightfully so, because something horrible and traumatic was done to you. It's natural to feel that, right? So anybody going through stuff, like, it's natural that we feel these types of feelings. But at the same time, when you make this whole blanket statement, like, all people deserve that hate, that's tough. And especially when they're right there loving on you,
wiping your butt.
I could imagine that must have.
I'm in the hospital, bro. Like, they were, washing me up. Bro, it was.
You can't do nothing. Yeah.
I could barely get out the bed. I couldn't get out the bed by myself. So they had like this lift to lift me up. They had to roll me to one side and roll me to the other and strap me in. It was a lot. They took care of me. These were great people. I mean, phenomenal people. And when I had a bad day and I start cussing them out, they just listened, heard me out, and they still took care of me. Good care of me.
Because they understood. I mean, look, I get that. Like, when my dad was in a bad car accident when I was in college, and ICU the whole nine, came home, and my mom, like, took care of him. Same thing, like, you know, like, cleaned him, right? All of that stuff, like, made sure he was good. And I remember him saying, like, look, I've always loved your mom, but the way she took care of me made me love her so much deeper, right? There's something about somebody taking care of you that is hard to, like, to hate when that love and care is just coming at you day in and day out.
With so much love. You know what I mean? And so that kind of softened my heart a little bit. And then my sixth grade teacher. Right? My sixth grade teacher, her name was Miss Shank. She came to visit me. And Miss Shank had a profound impact on my life. Because, you know, I had her class in the sixth grade, but all through middle school, she was just like my mom in the school, right? Just always looked out for me, made sure my grades was right, just, you know, whatever I needed, she was there. And
Ms. So shout out to the nurses and shout out to Miss Shane. Hey, I have one of those. That was Mrs. Jackson for me, so I understand that.
My sister passed away.
Go ahead.
She really stepped up because my grades started to drop, you know? School became a place to have fun because there was so much grief at home. And Miss Shank would bring me McDonald's and Wendy's for lunch. And you know, when you get McDonald's and Wendy's for lunch in middle school, that's like going to a five. And she would help me with my work. You know what I mean? And really, really love. So I never forgot her, you know? And when she showed up, it was like, I hate all white people, but these nurses and Miss Shank. Right?
You got too many exceptions now. It's too many. Like, oh, man, fine. I don't hate all white people.
My heart began to soften up and, you know, had these relationships. And they really, you know, made me, helped me to become more receptive to that love. And then I watched a short interview, you know, about Bob Proctor. And he, you know, quoting.
Oh, Bob Proctor. Oh, man. That's so crazy. I learned about Bob Proctor like maybe about a year or so ago. And he just recently passed.
He was the man. So he's quoting Think and Grow Rich, obviously. He's quoting a book about the subconscious mind. And there was another book he was quoting. And, yo, like, I began reading those books. And, you know, I began to really think about how I wanted to live my life. Let me find the name of this other book. Psycho-Cybernetics.
Yes, that is one of the books he always talks about.
Cybernetics. So I began to think about, like, how do I want to, create myself and create my future? Because if you listen to Bob Proctor, he's very empowering. He's all about accountability. Like, he was like a man's man where he's like, look, you got to do it. You know what I'm saying? And if you could visualize it, you could make it happen. And I began to visualize this person that I wanted to become, even though I wasn't that person.
Another one of my guests and a best friend from throughout my life and through from college, BJ Johnson was on, and he's the one that introduced me to Bob Proctor. And the thought of like pushing yourself, like what is it that you really believe, and go even beyond that. What is it that you're here for, right? Like and then be intentional about it. So like I can imagine as your heart is softening and you're having this love and care and you're having people show up for you, and then now you get to hear someone who's now trying to push you to be even beyond, and you're like, yo, dude, I can't even walk right now. Like, I'm working through a case right now. I can only imagine what was going through your heart and mind.
Bob Proctor, you have my heart softening up. Then you have my parents just creating this environment that they always created, just protecting me, right? And just like looking out for me.
Yeah.
And also my grandfather, and I always tell this story, I was depressed and my grandfather called my dad, and my dad's just, he was drained. He didn't know at this point what to say or do. And he was so hurt, you know, himself. And so my dad put me on the phone with my grandfather, who lives in Massachusetts. And my grandfather, you know, is an old wise guy. And he says, hey, I understand your life is shit right now. You know, you're experiencing the worst moment of your life. Mm. And the thing is, he said, you got to remember that you cannot fall off the floor. Right? It's impossible. Right?
That's deep. You
can't fall off the floor.
You can't fall off the floor.
It's up to you to get up. I cannot get up for you. Right? I can encourage you, but you have to pull yourself up off the floor. And how high you decide to climb is up to you. And I decided to pull myself up off the floor, and I'm still climbing. I haven't hit my peak yet. I'm still climbing, you know? And that was the shift for me, really.
Wow. Yo, that is so powerful, like everything that you're saying. And, you know, I think that also says a lot about you, right? Because, you know, in the work I do and helping people, things happen. People have been through trauma, been through heartache and pain, injustice, wrong things happen to them that shouldn't never have happened to them. And it's hard to let the light in. It's hard to soften your heart. It's hard to see the signs. I mean, what you're saying is like you, even though you were filled with the negativity and everything else and you were consuming it, you started to let the light in. You started to see the signs, which says a lot about you and your willingness to say, I don't want to be at this space. I want to be in a different place. And I think that's a lot to deal with you and your ability to take in what was there in that moment.
I knew I wanted to be happy, and I didn't know how I was going to get there. And so it was also a dance, though, right? It was like straight, you know, fuel to the fire content, right? That's content that made me so angry fully. And then I got a little taste of like Bob Proctor and Eckhart Tolle and start reading like the Apollo Coelho and start reading some Miguel Ruiz, the Four Agreements and the Mastery of Love and the Mastery of Self. But then I was swing by.
Awesome. Man, you need your own book list, man. You dropping like a whole bunch of gems right now.
I remember watching Bob Proctor, right? Yeah. Or Earl Nightingale. And then, you know, like just being fired up because I found he got the George Jackson. You know, he got the book Blood in My Eye or Soul Dead Brother. And I found him and I'm like, oh, you know what I mean? And I'm going in and these are people who I still appreciate. You know what I mean? I'm not saying like, you know, I got to this other side and then I threw those folks away. But I was able to channel, I was able to identify with their pain. You know, as I evolved and matured, I was able to identify with their pain and their struggle and kind of use that energy to fuel my love, nice. Right? To encourage my healing. Because I seen the results of, like, I was inspired by George Jackson, but then he ended up dying in jail, right? He was a revolutionary. Okay. But he lost his life. And I said, man, I got this son. I need my life. You know, and I think a lot of times we put these martyrs up on the pedestal. And I always ask, and I was, you know, in therapy one day, I inquired with my therapist and said, do you think they would say it was worth it? You know, them losing their lives, right? And I think about, you know, Malcolm X and what happened to his family. You know, after his death, you know, with, I think his grandson murdered, you know, his wife or something. He accidentally burnt the house down, right? And there was a lot of things that happened with the family because he wasn't there. And I think we put them up on a pedestal and say they died for us. Now they was murdered for one. And I believe they would have chose to live to become old men, right? And to share their wisdom. Yeah.
100%. I mean, you know, what you're saying, like, I really appreciate how you're saying, like, this dance, right? And I think that's all of us, right? We don't have to be shot and charged and in recovery to recognize that sometimes we're filled with hate or filled with negativity. And how much are we making room for the light? How much are we in the dance? How much are we, like, feeding ourselves, reading, listening to things that will even challenge that negativity? Some people wouldn't even do that. And I think, like, that dance is so precious and necessary. And then, like, this thought of, like, a will to live, right? Like, you know, I think that everything that you've been through is just, you know, lots of people would say, I can't believe that, right? But it was your will to live for your son, for your family, for yourself, for the future of saying, I want to be an old man. And there's something about being an old head, right? There's something about being able to be the person to impart wisdom or just be there for others. And I think they probably would have wanted that opportunity to see some of what they
were. And I would say this. There's a difference between being an old head and an old man, right? And especially in Black culture, you could be a 25-year-old and be an old head to somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I want to be an old man.
Yeah.
Right. And there's certain choices that I have to make, right, to keep myself healthy mentally, spiritually, physically, and emotionally so I could, you know, strive to become an old man. Now, if I would have let that anger consume me,
I love that.
Even if I did, if I would have let it consume me enough to act out, do an act of violence, then that could have killed me, right? Or put me inside of a prison where I don't have the best health care and so on and so forth. And I could have died that way. Or I could have let it fester inside of me. Mm-hmm. You feel me? I could have let it fester, the anger fester inside of me, give me high blood pressure, triggered. I could have been triggered every day because I see police cars every day, you know? Or I could make a conscious decision to let it go. And I think,
you know, what you're saying about the difference between an old head and an old man, I love it, right? Like conscious decisions, conscious choices that I want to be an old man. I want to be someone that is here for a long time. And so what am I doing? Like you said, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, how am I taking care of those things? And, you know, you mentioned it quickly, but I know that was a significant part of your journey, therapy, right? Like how did that even get added to it? Because once again, you know, certain neighborhoods, certain communities, lots, you know, certain trauma, we don't always think about therapy. How did that get added onto this softening of your heart, this feeding yourself with positivity, believing in possibilities?
Yeah, so
how did that get
I began to post on social media a lot. And I would write these motivational quotes and these posts because I was listening to motivational speakers all day. Les Brown. You know what I mean? Like Les Brown, Eric Thomas. Like I'm listening to all these people reading all of these amazing books. And so my language began to change. As my language began to change, the content that I was posting on social media became more inspiring. So now people began to view me as the inspiration when I wasn't even that person yet. I was actually writing what I needed to hear. So when people thought I was writing for them to motivate them, I was actually writing to myself. So when I was saying,
I mean, that goes back to Bob Proctor, right? Like being able to see or envision the future.
So I began to create this image of who I wanted to become, even though I wasn't that person fully. I had it in my heart. I had it in my mind. Yeah. And I will put it out there. And people began to see me as that person. So I began to show up as that person. Well, if you talk about healing and if you talk about community and stuff, well, as I was talking about those things, healing began to pop up. And I began to talk about healing for years, actually, before I actually began to heal. Wow. So on the outside, it looked like I was healing, but I was just talking about it. I wasn't doing the work. And it got to a point where talking about healing, talking about being an inspiration, it got to a point where that those things didn't fuel me the same way, right? It wasn't sustainable. So I felt like an inspiration on the outside. People viewed me as an inspiration, but I also felt like I was dying on the inside, right? In my book, I talk about how so many people was focused on my hero, but they forgot my healing. So I also forgot my healing. And I got to a point where—
And we can get caught up in that too, right? Like, you know, so many people want to tell the story, want to post the story. And, you know, like I fall into that too, right? We all want to capture to share to somebody else, but are we in the moment, right? Are we even paying attention to ourselves and our experiences? And for you to be able to acknowledge, right, that you were inspiring people, even trying to be this inspiration, but on the inside, there was a lot more work that needed to be
done. Got to a point where I had to make a decision, right? I had to make a choice to heal. And that's when I decided to go to therapy. And I would say that at some point, and I think it was, you know, maybe sometime after the conversation with my grandfather, where I had to make a choice to get up off the floor, I realized that I had a choice. And every choice that I made every day would either bring me closer to happiness, living life, right, equanimity, or bring me closer to anger, frustration, miserableness, right, and even death.
Yeah.
And when I...
It's this continuum. It's a continuum, right? And, you know, you said this earlier, sometimes people don't recognize how our emotional well-being impacts our physical health, high blood pressure, all that stuff, and early death, right? Or even lack of quality of life, right? No matter what your situation is. I mean, like you've been through, we talked about that 6-year span, loss, heartache, pain, trauma, and you're picking yourself up off the floor. You're making a choice daily. You're actively choosing healing. When so many others don't realize that they
and
have
it's
that
like
same
how we choose to cope. You know, I mean, at some point, you know, we were babies and we could use a binky for a coping mechanism to relax us, right? But then it got to a point where the binky didn't work anymore, right? And so, you know, being that inspiration and using social media, that was my binky, right? But it got to a point where that did not work anymore. I realized I was unhappy on the inside and I had this desire, again, to be happy. And so I thought, what is the healthiest way for me to heal, right? And to sustain my happiness. And I also have a good, you know, my aunt, mentor, Amber Sloan, you know, she's an activist here in Pittsburgh. And, you know, she was like, yeah, I go to therapy. You should check it out. You know what I mean? And, you know, she gave me her therapist number. And, you know, then one of my mentees that I was mentoring, you know, he was like, yeah, I go too. And I'm like, oh, snaps. Like, let me go check it out. You know, and I made that appointment and, you know.
I think that's what can happen with therapy, man. Like, you start hearing people talk about it, talk about mental health, anxiety, stress. I'm like, yo, you talking about it? You talking about it? You know, like, and I remember, like, you know, when you and I first met, how we even got into some of those conversations and how, you know, it now becomes like, now, you know, there's a therapist here, like, I'm talking about this stuff. And it's like, it all becomes, like you said, you're moving the needle where, like, you move from the anger and negativity to the positivity and dreaming, to healing and inspiration, to then therapy. And now it's all around you, all these different signs. And consistently, you have been willing to follow the signs. It sounds like you just didn't ignore the signs, which allowed you to keep moving forward.
One of my favorite books is The Alchemist. And Paulo Coelho talks about the good omens, right? And how those signs are good omens that keeps you on your path, you know, keeps you in alignment. And as long as you, you know, You take one step a day, you'll get there. You don't have to, you know, don't worry about 10 steps ahead or 20 steps ahead. You just make the choice. One choice to wake up, think about how can I take care of myself? And then how can I add value to the world? And, you know, with those steps, you know, I met good people like you, right? Along my journey, who really sowed seeds into me that, you know, put me along. Yeah.
It's been mutual, man. I don't leave any conversation with you without feeling charged and energized, just like I am today, man. So it's been mutual. You know, I really am grateful for all that you're sharing and all that you've been through. And I know that there's so much more, and there's a parts that, you know, hopefully we might get to. You know, I'm even wearing this shirt today, you know, because of your activism, right? Because of your presence, but how you've done it differently. Right. You have not been, I'm a black man shot by a white police. Like, let me like hate all white people. You found a different way to be an activist and to highlight injustice, but also show love and care. And I imagine that's part of some of the stuff that you're doing now. And so I'm curious, what are you doing now? And can you even talk about how you've integrated way of being an activist?
Let me back up and say, I learned a lot about power from my dad, right? And how to be efficient, how to get what you want the best way, right? Like efficiency was very important in my household. And so when you tie in, you know, my mom's love, you know, my dad's love, but really his protection. Right. My mom's very sweet and kind. My dad and forgiving. Yeah. My dad's very unforgiving. Right. So it was like the balance of those two personalities along with, you know, the inspiration from the Les Browns and Eric Thomases and Bob Proctors and all the books I read. And then you factor in therapy. So all these different tools, right, gave me, you know, understanding of how I wanted to lead, right? So it was more than, like, I lead with love, but it's actually more than leading with love, right? It's leading with love to be efficient, right? And so therapy helped me to be more objective in my leadership. When before therapy, I was so hurt. So everything was about me. Nice. This is how I feel. This is what I care about, and this is what I want, right? I want my voice heard. After going to therapy, I became more objective, so I could see, I learned to view other people's perspective, right? So in therapy, right, you might have a disagreement with, you know, your brother, and you're talking through it, and your therapist will help you see yourself and what you may have done wrong. Right. And help you see your brother's perspective. And you realize, like, oh, snaps. Like, I did kind of add to this. It's that mirror that's like, you know, accountability. Yeah. It doesn't take away accountability from the other person, but you're able to see yourself, even if you said, dang, right, I should never even want over there that day. Because I already thought.
I could have done that better. I could have said that better. They was not cool for what they did, but I still had some part in it.
Therapy helped me to, you know, process things differently. And so I began to think about, one, there are over 18,000 police departments in America, and they are all governed differently. They all got a different budget, different policies and procedures, right? So when someone says, hey, everybody in the United States, you know, go protest downtown. From my perspective, that is making an assumption that those people in, you know, different communities don't have the social capital, right, to get it done. Like, what do you want? And what phone call can I make without people having to call off work, right? Without people getting locked up from standing in the streets? Because, you know, we're at a point now where, you know, when I got shot 10 years ago, you know, awareness wasn't really a thing. You know, people assume like, yo, this doesn't really happen. Or if it did happen, what did you do? Now public opinion has shifted dramatically.
Yeah.
Right? To the point where a lot of people, and I would say most people, probably say, what did the officer do? Right? So we're now in an era where we can, we have social capital, right? Certain people have social capital, and they can make a phone call to get something done. So I say, you know, instead of being this national activist, how about I focus on my city in the police department in Pittsburgh? What can I do? Right? What relationships can I, you know, have? Yeah. And again, those good elements. So I didn't intentionally say, let me work with the police chief. I actually went on a rant on Twitter and called him racist and said he didn't care about Black people and so on and so forth. And a friend that I met, right, who's an attorney, really powerful. She, you know, said, have you ever met Chief Schubert? I had never met him. And I saw him on TV. He wasn't the chief when I was shot, right? We had two different chiefs before him, right? So she set it up. We met. First meeting was, you know, we both a little standoffish, but we respect her. So, you know, we talk, you know, we meet for lunch, then we have dinner at her house, and eventually we become friends. And he began to tell me about why he became a police officer and different experiences. And I shared my experiences. And I realized, dang, he really got a good heart. Right. And he's just a face. He's a face.
I mean, I know that there's more to that, but I just want to highlight how that's so powerful, where there are moments where the negativity will still come up even after, or even while we're on our journey. It's not like it disappeared all the way. It'll come out. And sometimes that's how we act out sometimes, or how sometimes we'll do things that he's like, oh man, that was a bad look. I shouldn't have done that. Right. Because it's still there. We get triggered. And it sounds like you got triggered in that moment. You went off. You didn't necessarily look at all the facts because you were feeling something, because maybe one of the chiefs was racist, but maybe not that one. Right. But then now, once again, you allow yourself to follow the signs, and now you're building relationship with someone. And so go ahead. I mean, I just think that we don't often do that. Sometimes we just act out and that's it. But you were willing to hear, hey, have you
met him?
I'm willing.
You gotta be open-minded. Because some of the things he said from his perspective, it's kind of like, oh, a little stung a little bit. You know what I mean? But then as I began to understand his story and appreciate him as a person, as a human being, I'm like, he's a good guy. You know what I mean? And we became friends, and we started a foundation together, you know, and we're working. Yeah, me and the chief.
Wow.
He's my co-founder.
You and the chief?
Yeah, and so we both care about mental health. That's one of our pillars. We both care about workforce development. Wow. That's one of our pillars. We both care about gun violence, you know, that's one of our pillars. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't care, you know, if he, you know, he's not that guy, but if he had a blue line flag or whatever, I'm able to see past all that. You know what I mean? He doesn't. But even if he did, he cares about what I care about, and we're able to collaborate on things that we both care about. Sure.
I love how you, I mean, there's, and I know that there's another part of this, but you went from being shot by a police officer, a white police officer, to going through your journey to now starting a foundation with the chief of police. That's crazy. We don't often hear it that way, right? We don't hear that the same system or groups of people who created the trauma, that you find good people in the system.
Listen,
and
collaboration has been more efficient than any of the activism I've done before this. Like, last Thursday, I went to a high school with a sergeant here in Pittsburgh. And the sergeant goes every other week to the high school to speak. And there was a couple of young people that they're trying to get to, but they're having a tough time because they don't really speak the language. And these young people have experienced some severe trauma. And I went, and the power of those youth seeing me and then seeing these officers in the same space, me being raw about my story, the officers really having, you know, compassion for what I've been through. You know what I mean? And, you know, we were able to, like, you know, work together. And I said, yes, that dance.
The dance.
And
again.
Yeah, there was one little guy. He was the hardest little kid. He was the hardest in the room. And he was the leader. And he like, I don't give a fuck about that. You know what I mean? Or I'm going to get licked back. My officers are talking. You know how young people talk. I was talking to him about retaliation and things.
Yeah.
By the end of the class, yeah, he was literally crying on my shoulder. And the teacher was...
Because at the heart of it, so many of them are... So many of us, in general, are in pain, are in dealing with trauma and our own mental health challenges. And that's not often being spoken to, right? But that's what you are doing. And like you said, collaboration is like, it's seeing reconciliation. It's seeing love. It's seeing care in action.
Yeah, man.
Like, and yo, another thing that was possible.
Seeing a therapist has really helped me become more self-aware, right? And it has also given me the language, right, to help other people unpack things through our conversation. Be a normal conversation, but because I'm in therapy, right, I have language and questions to dive deeper beneath the surface, and it helps me with relationship building, right? Even with someone like the chief, who I had a lot of differences with, right? But I got to hear his story, hear his perspective, and then come up with some solution, right? Because it's easy to just say, you know, F the police, F the chief, F the mayor, F, you know, whomever, and just, you know, but if I'm doing this to make, you know, the world safer for my son, right? What is going, like, going on social media posting, what is that going to do to make my son safe? Because I know that one day my son's going to be 16 years old, driving a nice car, and he's potentially going to get pulled over, right? So if I'm just on...
Right. And could be seen as a threat, could be whatever, but if you are collaborating, working together, changing policies, changing mindsets.
And building relationships. Because he knows a lot of these officers, right? Like, he knows them, right? Again, it's hyper-local. We should know our police officers. We should know all of our teachers. Yeah. We should know all of our elected officials. We should know every person doing business in our community. We should know all of our neighbors and their children and what school they go to. Community. And we live in neighborhoods now. We don't live in communities. Dick Gregory always talked about that, right? Like,
and it makes the stories real, right? It's a, you're a real person, not just some random person. You know, with what you're saying, I'm curious, as you know, there's a, look, you and I could talk for like another 3 hours, but I'm going to try to start to wrap it up. But I'm wondering, what is the name of the foundation and where could people find out more information?
The foundation is called the Hear Foundation, like I hear you, right? And I don't know the website, man. Yeah, I don't know that. I have an executive.
That's all right. Hey, if they look up Leon Ford, they're going to find the foundation, right? So that's all good. And we'll have it. It will be in the show notes with the link, and people will be able to find it.
Hear Foundation Pittsburgh. I'm for sure it'll pop up. And one of my goals, like I said, you know, there are over 18,000 police departments in America, and they are all governed differently. Helping to lead a tour called the Heal America Tour, which was started by my mentor, Bishop Omar, who actually passed away last year. And he was just a phenomenal man and really instilled a lot inside of me. But we were going to different cities having this Heal America Tour, right? Where we would have these panel discussions with police officers, activists, you know, athletes, entertainers, philanthropists. And when he passed away, we were thinking about, yeah, what can, you know, Heal America 2.0 look like? So as a part of my vision, I'm working with, you know, Heal America and Heal America platform to go around to different cities. And as we're going around to these different cities, having these panel discussions and doing these events and, you know, funding different initiatives, my vision is to build with the police officers in the community, the activists, the community leaders, the philanthropic community, the corporate folks, the business leaders, the educators, and to help them start up their own foundations on that. And they can pick their own pillars, they pick their own board members, but I'm gonna get the conversation started and show them, you know, and use the template that we used in Pittsburgh to help them.
And once again, it helps you to move change forward, right? For other people, other communities, future generations. And, you know, once again, I think like all that you're doing is powerful. I'm curious, some questions I like to ask people before we end. Who would you want to work with or collab with, as we've been talking about collaboration? If you could think about anybody, who would you like to work with or collaborate with?
I would love, that's a really tough question.
And I know you've probably worked with lots of people and already collabed with lots of people, but I think with all that you're doing, I'm wondering who,
I mean, there are who would be on so your list. Many individuals. I don't want to name people I already work with, though. I mean,
that's all right. Well, maybe we'll start there.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to continue
really
that work.
Inspired by President Obama and the My Brothers Keeper Alliance. I believe that they are doing really great work. I participated on a panel with him and Senator John Lewis, Darnell Moore.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yep. I remember that one. I actually don't, Darnell. I need to get him on the podcast.
Laquan Muhammad was on that panel, Brian Stevenson. I facilitated a panel like 2 months ago with Shaka Singor, Pat Pooh, a woman from, she was a psychotherapist from Michigan. I believe her name was Shawnee Saxon. She was amazing. She blew me away.
Wow.
Just, you know, I have to follow up with her now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I would really, I'm a huge Kanye West fan. And I would really love to have a conversation with Kanye West. Yeah.
I think it would be dope. I mean, I could see you having that conversation and there'd probably be a lot of
powerful things
come out of that.
I think it'll be a conversation that he hasn't had because I just want to vibe, you know what I mean? And there's so much, you know, that we have in common to discuss where I think I can pull some things out and pour some things into him that can really add value to what he's trying to do in the world. Charlamagne.
Look, I told you.
Yeah, Charlamagne too.
Go ahead, tell you were saying Charlamagne.
That I really appreciate, that I would love to work with. Oprah Winfrey. She's amazing.
Those are all good people on your list. And I, you know, when you talk about Charlamagne, when you talk about Kanye, I could see, you know, especially with the things that you're sharing and your journey and their journey, I think that would be really interesting. Two things I often like to ask people near the end is, and you've been already saying this, but I'm curious still to hear, what would you say mental wellness means?
Mental wellness is, well, what does it mean to me? I would say it means a lot to me. Mental wellness for me is a holistic approach to life, right? Mental wellness is, you know, a lifestyle, right? It's like you don't go to a therapy and just say, I'm healed, right? It's a process. And mental wellness isn't just about therapy. Mental wellness is about also working out. What are you listening to? What are you watching? What are you eating, right? Who do you have in your life that's pouring into you, right? It's a holistic approach to maintain a good quality of life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. And the last question I ask is, what mental wellness advice would you give to your younger self? And that could be as early as yesterday or any time in the past.
I would tell, you know, My younger self, I would tell myself now that it is okay. Just be you. Do your best. You know, and even sometimes your best ain't good enough for the world, but that ain't got nothing to do with you. As long as you show up, that, you know, and do your best. That's it. You know what I mean? And take your time. Take your time. Be patient. Breathe. Be present. Be present. Enjoy every moment. And even those moments that are difficult, that are hard to enjoy, just feel them. Because they are valuable as well. There's some moments that, you know, when I think about when I was in the hospital, that I wish I felt a little bit more. Because now I'm out of it and I try to go back to really pull wisdom. Yeah. It's hard because I try my best to skip over those moments. So,
yeah. I mean, that's interesting even saying that. Like the thought of like sometimes we're moving so fast, trying to get ahead or away from something, but we could still miss if we allowed ourselves to just be more present. And I really like your thought of just slowing down and, you know, being okay with who you are and just breathing, right? How important that is. You know, Leon, you are amazing, dynamic, powerful, but just your continuous growth and looking for the good omens, looking for the good signs and how that has brought you on a journey of healing and what you're doing for so many others is just incredible. And I know that the foundation's out there and the Here Foundation, you know, want people to check that out and support. And I know you got a book, right? It's going to be coming out sometime. Maybe you need to come back with the book.
The book is scheduled for May 2023. I am Leon Ford, the Phoenix Who Rises.
I love that. So we're going to have you back. We're going to talk about the book, everything in the book. Let's do a part two. But Leon, man, I am grateful for our friendship. I'm grateful for who you are, the man that you are, the father you are, the way you show up, the way you lead. I've learned deeply from the things you have shared. And I'm grateful that we just had this moment to chat like we usually do. And you know this already, but I'll take this time to say, you know, any way that I can be supportive, any way that we can partner, collaborate, work together, I'm totally down because the way that you have been an example of healing and recovery and just being on the journey is impressive. And I'm all about trying to support that, support you and the things that you're trying to do. So thank you for joining LeapCast and for being here. And if there's any last words, I'll leave it to you. Any last
words you want to say? Thank you for sharing your platform. You know, I remember, you know, laughing with you many occasions saying, dang, we should have recorded that conversation. This could have been a podcast.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, thank you for just sharing yourself with so many people and for encouraging me to seek therapy. And I remember, you know, when I was inquiring about therapy, you were one of the first people that I reached out to when it was just a thought, right? And, you know, to think back to that day and when I was in Philadelphia, you know, at Rob Wilson's place, conversation that we had there.
Yeah.
You know, to now, I'm like a completely different person, you know? And I feel good. And so, you know, I just thank you for that, you know, for encouraging me and inspiring me and just, you know, for our friendship. So I appreciate you, bro.
Yo, man. Thanks, man. That means a lot. And we're all growing, man. And I think some of this is being able to, you know, for the listeners to inspire them to know that they can pick themselves off the floor, that they can find the good omens and that they can let light in. And that they can transform from wherever you are now to something completely different in a better way. And so I'm grateful for the time, grateful for you being here. And hey, we're going to do this again because, you know, you got a book dropping and all that. And I know there's always good stuff happening. So Leon, thanks for joining me here on LeapCast. And thank you again. Wow. What an incredible ride we just went on with another great member of the LeapCast community. I appreciate you listening and hope you got some tangible value from the episode. Please let us know what you think by leaving a comment, rating, and review. As always, please don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. This is Dr. George James, and I'll see you next time.